just this churning some numbers for you. We now have a top 10 Hall of Fame in startups. That is, we just averaged the startups over a five-year period, and they are in this order, and feel free to yell out or whatever if your school comes, if your university is named. First is MIT. This is in descending order, and it's over 5 years, 2000 to 2004. 2004 is the latest autumn statistics. MIT, University of California, Caltech, Georgia Tech, Stanford, University of Michigan, University of Illinois, Chicago, Urbana, University of Pennsylvania, USC, University of Minnesota, and University of Pittsburgh. I put in as number 11 because it's my hometown, and it does happen to be 11. There are several that didn't make the top 10 that in the last couple of years are coming on very strong, including University of Pittsburgh, go Steelers, University of Florida, Cornell, University of Colorado, and those are just some among the many that are coming on strong over the last couple of years. What else do we know? We also know that the rate of startups at universities has clearly increased over the last decade, but it has not increased at the same rate as the execution of licenses at the universities. For instance, I mentioned MIT, which is the powerhouse, or one of the powerhouses in startups. And while they had 20 startups in FY 2004, they had 134 licenses. Some of the universities, if you take a look at the data, are clearly focusing on startups. Universities like Georgia Tech, Caltech, University of Pittsburgh, University of Colorado, University of Florida, and some others, when you take a look at them, not only are their numbers increasing very rapidly over the last 5 years in terms of startups, but it's also increasing as a ratio to their total licensing. We also know that while there are greater numbers of startups are coming out of universities with greater R&D expenditures, and that makes some common sense, this is not always the case. And there are some surprises and some rising stars and some small gems that you wouldn't even think of. Virginia Tech, even though they had about $128 million in research expenditures, they spun out slightly more startups than Penn State, which had $600 million in research expenditures. RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnical Institute, with only about $60 million in research expenditures, consistently spins off about three to four startups a year. University of UNC Charlotte, with only $25 million a year in research, is spinning off a couple of startups every year. And Brigham Young University, with only $24 million in expenditures, is spinning off four and five companies a year consistently. Now, when you normalize the data, and not much more data, but you have very different results, and that is you simply take the number of startups and you divide it by R&D expenditures to find out who is really doing an effective job. It's one of the factors that would indicate who's really doing an effective job of spinning out businesses. And that list of 10 is completely different. If you look at just FY 2004, we haven't averaged for the 5 years on that. We come up with this list. Number one, Brigham Young University. Two, University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Three, University of Toledo. Four, RPI. Five, University of Notre Dame. Six, Michigan Technological University. Seven, Virginia Tech. Eight, University of Mississippi. Nine, Texas Tech. And 10, Rice University. These are universities that are doing an effective job of spin-offs, oftentimes despite very modest research expenditures. We also know that when we look at the data, if you look at the autumn data, and God bless autumn for collecting this data, because otherwise we would not have any of this data available, there we find as many questions as we do answers. Why are some of the universities with high R&D expenditures not producing startups? And conversely, why are some unlikely universities with modest R&D expenditures licensing significant startups? Now, this is where you're going to expect for me to say something brilliant and give you all the answers. Most of it I simply don't know why some of the universities are or are not generating startups. But I can take some good guesses based on our research for accelerating economic development through university tech transfer, and also an upcoming book that we're doing for the National Science Foundation that takes a look at another 10 universities with more modest research expenditures than some of the high hitters like Stanford's and MIT's. I'd like to address some of the commonalities and some of what we found in the universities, in at least 20 universities around the country that we took an in-depth assessment of. Leadership from the top is always important, and a commitment to launching startups often is part of an economic development mission. You know, we find that university presidents, such as Dick Atkinson, who was the president of UCSD, George Lowe, who the late president of RPI, and more recent presidents of University of Akron, University of North Carolina at Charlotte, University of Colorado, and elsewhere that are up and coming in startups, they have all one thing in common. They've got presidents who talk the talk and walk the walk. They feel that their mission in economic development is important, that as Dick Atkinson told me in a discussion several years ago, he said, and I quote, "I believe that it is part of the university's mission, as a state-funded institution to give something back to the state by creating more favorable environment for attracting and developing technology industries." And again, these are also universities that not only talk about from the president's level and the provost level that this is a priority for their university to participate in the community, to develop startups, to disseminate knowledge and innovations and information to the community, but they are also doing things that reward and in their hires for professors. They value entrepreneurship as part of their hires. They also reward in tenure and in other ways those faculty and researchers that actually do startups and that have licensed technologies. These universities also know and understand their core competencies, and they often have developed strategies to build on those core competencies and often go after federal R&D in order to help build those competencies. There is a recognition of the link between technology transfer and economic development and entrepreneurial development and seed capital. This is very critical. You know, oftentimes in these universities, the tech transfer office sits here, then you have the business school with some entrepreneurial activities over here, then sometimes an entrepreneurial society that's run by students, sometimes a business plan competition. These are disparate types of activities, usually not connected. And this is a problem in a lot of universities. These universities, such as MIT and some of the more widely recognized universities that do a good job, have found a way of not only creating an entrepreneurial environment, but also connecting the dots between technology transfer, commercialization, entrepreneurial development, and investment capital. Other universities are beginning to address this and starting to make the link, and you're starting to see things like even a recent ad for a position at Boston University where they're establishing an entrepreneurial development position as part of their technology transfer office. Georgia Tech is the best known for getting it all together in this area, and their startups reflect that. They have an umbrella organization that pulls together tech transfer, their venture lab, ATDC, which is their incubator, a small seed capital fund, other linkages to seed capital, a CEO in residence program, mentoring programs, and the list goes on. They do a very effective job of marrying, blending this mix of tech transfer, entrepreneurial development, entrepreneurship, and again, bringing in that investor community, bringing in the entrepreneurs in the way of CEOs in residence, and mentoring of startups in Georgia Tech. Again, there's this attitude of startup companies are important, and that we're going to have them spin off, locate in our community, and grow in our community. Most of us know, and I don't have the empirical evidence to back this up, licenses tend to go elsewhere. They can go anywhere. And oftentimes, unless you're in a Silicon Valley or in Boston, your licenses are going to places outside of your community and often outside of your state. Startups tend to stick a little closer to home, especially if the community and the university are involved in making that happen. And these startups, an effort needs to be made by both the university and the community to capture those startups from the universities and to make sure that they're developing and growing in your community and in that university community, which will benefit the university in the long run and certainly the economy of that region. Also, these universities have sufficient staff in their technology transfer offices that allows them to take the time to develop startups and to make the linkages and to proactively go after seed capital. And often these staff are trained in business, have some entrepreneurial background, and sometimes some financial experience. This is important because we also know that the marginal cost of developing a startup is much greater than licensing to corporations. It takes time to do it and a lot of effort to do it. You have to have the staff and the resources behind that. There's also an understanding of the importance of seed stage capital and early stage capital. And there's proactive development of seed capital funds, but more than that, there is a proactive attitude toward seed capitalists and venture capitalists. And MIT, one of the things that strikes you the most is it's not unusual to see venture capitalists in and out of the technology transfer office there. And Lita Nelson, who's the director of MIT's office there, said that they will call up a venture capitalist if they see something that looks interesting and they know that that VC works in that space, they will call them up. And at earlier and earlier stages, even at, you know, early research stages, and say, look, I just thought you'd know, like to know that something looks interesting. Why don't you come in, talk to the researcher, catch them at an early stage, and start working with them. There's also infrastructure in the university and around the university to support entrepreneurs and, again, to develop and capture those entrepreneurs. This includes, you know, the traditional incubators and research parks, but more importantly, it involves things like Enterprise Forum that allow entrepreneurs the opportunity to showcase to investors, to work with entrepreneurial mentors from the community, and to business plan competitions, and an abundance of networking opportunities can't be overstressed. Again, looking at MIT, you know, networking opportunities are on a weekly basis over there. It's not a one-time showcasing event. It's not a one-time annual dinner. It's all around you. It's an entrepreneurial environment, a networking environment that's just ongoing and just there all of the time. Also, university strategies and community strategies need to take the whole picture into account, and this too often doesn't happen. You know, too often, again, we take a look at only one piece of the puzzle. We look only at IP, only at licensing processes, how to make licensing processes more efficient, how to structure a technology transfer office and make that more efficient. And we're not putting together the pieces. Again, technology transfer, you know, in order to do startups, you've got to have the investment capital, you've got to have the management capacity building, you've got to have all of these, the mentoring, all of these pieces have got to be in place, and that there needs to be a comprehensive view at both the university level and the community level to help support that university view and university activities. There's still a lot of remaining issues that we're grappling with, even at the best universities. Some of those issues continue to be a tug and pull between the mission of teaching and commercializing inventions, including launching of startups. It's surprising that in 2006, we still hear the same kind of talk that you heard 20 years ago, although not as much, and it's a little quieter in terms of should we really be doing this at all. And frankly, a lot of technology transfer offices you know, feel that while licensing is their job and they've gotten into it because they found out that it can make them some money, and it can make them look awfully good. Startups, well, you know, they're not too, they're ill at ease with doing startups. They're not too crazy about it. And they'll do it if they're pushed into it, but they really are ill-equipped to deal with startups. They don't understand them. They don't understand what it takes to actually do them. They don't have the resources to actually do them. And many, other than the Georgia Techs and the MITs, most universities are still very ill at ease with doing startups. Avoidance of risk. Universities tend to be conservative institutions. They're academic institutions. They're not businesses. They don't run like businesses. And their mindset is not a business mindset. And I found it interesting that in autumn, there was a 2004, in fall of 2004, they put out their autumn journal was focused on startups. And in the preface, the editor's preface said, licensing a technology to a company that is just starting its operations or is still in a very early stage of growth can be risky. However, and sometimes licensing to a more established company is a more attractive opportunity if a university wants to avoid risk. Not exactly what encouraging startups. And no offense to Autumn, they do a great job, but it reflects the views of universities. And, you know, I can't disagree with this, but I think a university has to weigh the benefits of putting its time and energies into starting a startup. A little redundant. And this depends on many things, you know. It is important for the university to have a role in economic development. Do they feel that they have a commitment to the community, to the state, to the nation, to develop new businesses? And that sometimes depends on the governor and state legislature of some of these states that are now starting to put pressure on state universities and saying, we want more return of investment for our state dollars, and we want to see jobs. We don't want to see just licenses. We don't want to see just money coming back into your university. We want to see businesses. We want to see growth around the university. We want to see jobs. And because of that, some universities are going kicking and screaming into, okay, I guess the tech transfer office now has to deal with startups. But they are, many of them, moving into this direction, frankly, somewhat, some of them, because of political pressures. Are the resources in the community, in the state, and at the federal levels to even deal with this? Number three, in terms of issues, it is generally accepted, again, that launching startups is a higher marginal cost. And, you know, is the university willing to put that more money, more effort, more time into that higher marginal cost of developing the startups? Seed capital, again, is beginning to be recognized as a key ingredient and a key piece of the puzzle. The problem is a lot of the universities don't know what to do about it. They again, are not comfortable with dealing with venture capitalists and certainly early stage capital. Some universities have started their own seed capital funds, but they tend to be very small. You know, they tend to be $500,000, and they fund five businesses with that. They're sticking their little toe in the water and in order to avoid risk. And some of those small funds are successful, some are not, and most are just beginning. Other universities do a good job. Connect at UCSD, that's now a nonprofit, you know, the famous MIT Enterprise Forums, et cetera, in terms of making links and showcasing. And others, as we mentioned before, like the MITs, actually proactively will involve venture capitalists. And some, such as Georgia Tech and earlier the University of California at San Diego, that did not have venture capital in their community years ago, they actually went and proactively took some of their companies from their universities, went up to Sand Hill, went up to Boston, and held receptions. University of California and San Diego held receptions for VCs at Sand Hill up in Silicon Valley. And Georgia Tech has had receptions for VCs in the Boston area to, again, create this network, this networking atmosphere that did not exist in their communities. And after a while, the VCs start to catch on that there are some good deals to be had in Atlanta and in San Diego. And now, you know, at least the San Diego area has very little problem getting early stage capital and VC into its community. It took some proactive and some creative thinking to do that, and taking them and going to the, what's the expression about the mountain going to Muhammad? There is, again, this issue of disconnect between technology transfer and commercialization activities, entrepreneurial development, and seed capital that continues to be an issue in most universities. In general, whether it's a corporation looking for a license or a VC who wants to try and talk to somebody in the university about deals, it's often difficult for that VC or that corporation to know where to go and how to navigate. The corporations often complain also, in terms of licensing, that universities are very inflexible and have become more so in recent years. Research universities and research centers, directors of those off the record will say to you, we have a problem with it too, because as our university becomes less flexible, we are getting less and less research and development funding from corporations, and they don't want to play with us anymore in the sandbox because it's becoming too difficult to play with us. In terms of the valley of death, it's real, and there are few policies and programs directed at eliminating it and dealing with that. We also know that we do not do a good enough job at capturing the results of university research and a good enough job of capturing the numbers of startups and actual outcomes that are actually happening from universities. We still don't do a good job of that, and Autumn is really the only game in town in terms of doing that, and they do it well, but still we need to have better information and better analysis in some of these areas. So what do we do about all this? What can be done at the federal levels, in the universities, and at state and local levels? In the universities, I believe we need to build strong and focused university research base that feeds the pipeline for commercialization. If you ask Lita Nelson, again at MIT, what is the number one ingredient that makes her program successful, she will tell you our excellent research base. Federal funding of research and basic research is critical. That's where the pipeline starts, and that's for licenses or for startups. And building a focused research base in a university, particularly universities that have more modest research expenditures, is very important. Focusing on what you do well, understanding what you do well, number one, and focusing on what you do well. University of Akron and Polymers, they're focusing on that, and they're increasing their startups because of it. Little Alfred University that has 2,500 students in New York State focuses on ceramics and does it very, very well. And this little school with 2,500 students has actually spun off businesses in ceramics. Go after R&D, go after federal funding in core competency areas. Leadership, leadership, leadership from university presidents. Connect the dots between technology transfer and entrepreneurial development. Make sure there's abundance of networking opportunities. Make sure that you're connecting with seed and venture capitalists. If your community has little seed capital, create it, find it, go after it. Consider developing an internal seed capital fund or providing matching for external seed capital. Work with corporations in your community on a regular basis to involve them in mentoring, to become CEOs in residence, to sit on enterprise forum panels, to sit on university advisory boards. Don't just go to corporations when you want them to license something. Involve them in the university. Educate state policymakers and public policymakers in the technology transfer process, and educate them about the potential to create jobs and that they need to be supporting this with programs at the state level. at state and local levels, work with your universities. If there aren't the entrepreneurial infrastructure and programs and initiatives, create them. Link them with your universities. Talk to your universities. Again, educate policymakers. Publicize and celebrate the successes at your universities. And lastly, at the federal level, again, fund basic research. This begins the pipeline and is critical to the pipeline. I'd also say that we need an agency or quasi-agency, either OTP, which is losing traction in the U.S. Department of Commerce. They should be, instead of trying to get rid of it, they should be doubling, tripling, quadrupling it in terms of analyzing some of this data, looking at best practices, or put it in a National Academy of Sciences, an NSF, wherever. But we need a place where a repository that can capture, analyze some of this data, work with best practices, et cetera. Would also be useful to have some templates and benchmarking in this area. Industry differences need to be recognized and need to be at both the university level and the federal levels. There is a need to break down this artificial barrier between technology transfer and commercialization and entrepreneurship. You find it in the SBIR program, where you have, you know, talk increasingly over the last years about commercialization, when in fact there is very little funding and very little flexibility in the program to actually do market assessments and to build management capacity and to do some of the things that need to be done to move the research to an actual commercialization stage. And there needs to be recognition, again, of this valley of death that we all hear so much about, and something needs to be done about it. In terms of my wish list, I'd like to see some programs at the federal level that focus on matching of seed funding for university startups, matching of private seed capital and seed funding for university startups. I'd also like to see some funding go toward maturation of innovations and to move them over this valley of death. And I'd like to also see, as we were saying, a repository or a program that focuses on metrics, best practices, et cetera, in this area. In closing, there's a lot of work that we've come a long way in developing startups out of universities, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done at all levels, policy levels and program levels, at the federal, state, and local levels, and in the universities themselves. There's also an education campaign that needs to be done. And I'll just close with something that Kathy Koo, who's the director of the Office of Technology Licensing at Stanford, said to us, and that was, look, our program is 30 years old. It took a long time and a lot of patience to develop our programs here. It took 15 years for us just to break even, and even though it probably would take less time starting today, it probably wouldn't take that much less. So I'll leave you today with our three success factors in the field of tech transfer, and that is patience, perseverance, and prayers. Thank you.